South side.
Genesis 46 is where we'll be tonight. We've been spending the last several weeks, starting in chapter 37, looking at presumably the life of Joseph, right? Every chapter has been about Joseph and the things that have happened to Joseph and how God's providence was working through Joseph in every aspect of his life to fulfill the things that we saw happen, or the things that were beginning to unfold, at least in our study of chapter 45, as Jacob and the rest of his family are moving to Egypt. And there they will multiply, and there they will prosper. But we need to remember, I think, that really, these last several chapters have not been about Joseph. Who have they been about? I don't know, maybe you would say God, right? Because you see God working, but that's not the answer I'm looking for either. Think back to Genesis chapter 37, verse 2, when we enter into this record of the life of Joseph. Well, there's some about his brothers in there, but Genesis chapter 37, verse 2 says, these are the generations of Jacob. And so we're talking about Jacob, right? Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and so this is a very important man. And it's very important that we understand who his children are. And it's very important we understand who Joseph is, and that's why there's so much focus on Joseph. Joseph's two sons, we'll find later, will have tribes named after them. They'll be given some inheritance. But we learn some things about the other brothers, too, along the way. They seem to be supporting characters, sideline characters in the story of Joseph, but they are central figures in the story of Jacob's descendants, because they all are descendants of Jacob. And we'll later read about Reuben, the tribe of Reuben. We'll read about the tribe of Judah, right? That's a very important tribe. And so why did Jesus come from the tribe of Judah? I think we can make some logical deductions based on the things we've studied of the generations of Jacob. But now it seems the story begins to focus back onto Jacob. How old is Jacob by the time we get to chapter 46? Any guesses? Jacob. Young man, old man, middle-aged man. He's an old man. He's 130 years old at this time. And it's interesting to see over the course of his life, even back from what we find in his home, in his childhood home, his boyhood home, growing up with his brother Esau, growing up the favorite son of his father or mother, the favorite son of his mother, being the not favorite of his father, of Isaac. But there's so much that Jacob has learned over the course of his life. So much that he seems to forget every now and then. But we recognize in the beginning he was a deceiver, right? He was a trickster. He would work around the system to his own benefit. But then as he went out on the run, remember he lays down to sleep at Bethel, and he puts his head on a rock, and God comes to him in a vision and says, I'll be with you, I'll bless you. He makes all of these promises to Jacob, and Jacob trusts in those promises. But then as he grows up, the pattern that was established in his home as a boy, it seems to pick up with him. As he starts to play favorites with his children, and that's where we focused in the life of Jacob for the last several weeks, looking at predominantly Joseph. But now, thanks to the goodness of God, And thanks to the faithfulness of Jacob's favorite son, Joseph, Jacob would come into some great blessings as his life begins to come to a close. And he would do this with confidence. Now let's think about what's about to happen. Well, let's go ahead and read verses 1 through 4. Scott's not here tonight. I was going to have him read all these names that we get to about middle of chapter 46. So we may just stop short of that, and he can read it next week. So Israel took his journey with all that he had. Who's Israel? That's Jacob. Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt. I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." Let's think about what is going on in the life of Jacob here. Jacob is an old man. And Jacob has been told by his son, "Come to Egypt." And Pharaoh said, "Don't worry about bringing anything. We'll have everything you need here and to spare. So you just get your family and y'all come on." This is a time of great transition, a time of great change in the life of Jacob, right? Pick up your stuff. No, don't pick up your stuff. Leave your stuff and go to this other place. Now let's think a little bit about Egypt. Who was Jacob's grandfather? Abraham. And Abraham, did he ever go to Egypt? Things go well for Abraham in Egypt? No, he got in trouble in Egypt. Who was Jacob's father? Isaac. Did Isaac ever go to Egypt? No. He wanted to go, but something happened. What happened? God said, "Stop." God said, "Don't go to Egypt." And so now here you are, Jacob. Your grandfather's been to Egypt. It didn't work out so well for him. Your father tried to go, and God told him to stop. And now your son is telling you, "Come to Egypt." A 130 years old. Nobody in this room is that old. But we do have some people here that might consider themselves to be a little bit advanced in years. Probably not many of you would think that about yourself. But how much do you like change? How much does anybody really like change? We get comfortable with where we are, don't we? We get comfortable with the things that we have and the things that we have surrounding us. Do you think Jacob was comfortable with where he was living? Do you think he was comfortable with the things that he owned? Now, he was miserable, right, because he thought he had lost his son. But outside of that, he was pretty comfortable. Why would he go? Because of his family. Because he wanted to be with Joseph. Do you think he had any doubts? Okay. Sure, he wanted to see his son. But what would cause him to doubt going to Egypt? Okay, well, he's way up north, right? In Canaan. And here he goes to the south. About a week, I think, is what I read. A week's journey from Hebron to Beersheba. And he stops. he stops in Beersheba. Have we read anything about Beersheba up to this point in the book of Genesis? If you don't know, just say yes. We have. We have. We've read about it several times. It was a very special place to Jacob and to his family. Abraham dug a well there. Abraham lived there after he offered Isaac on Mount Moriah. Isaac lived there. It was from his home in Beersheba that Jacob left and went to Laban's house to find a wife. God appeared to Hagar at Beersheba. Later, God would appear to Isaac at Beersheba. And now, here he is appearing to Jacob at this special place. And what does God do as he speaks to Jacob? The same thing that he's always done when he's spoken to Jacob. The first time he spoke to Jacob in Bethel, he gives him assurance. He gives him promises. And that should have supplied Jacob with the confidence he needed to do what God instructed him to do. And so here, in a very similar situation, God appears to Jacob, gives him assurances, gives him promises, and tells him what he needs to do. Jacob builds an altar. Let's back up a little bit before we get to the altar. Pharaoh said, don't bring anything. What did Jacob bring? Everything. Don't bring anything, but they bring everything. Could that present a problem when he arrives in Egypt? What would you do if somebody came to you, even your child, right, and says, and this may have happened to some people. This could be a real story, right? This is a real story. This did really happen between Joseph and Jacob. But it could happen between me and my children, where they say to me, leave everything and come live with me. I've got plenty. I'll take care of you. You don't need anything that's at your house. You leave it all and just come stay with me. What would you do? Is there nothing that's important to you in your house? How many of you have evacuated for a hurricane? How many of you left everything in your house? How many of you left your pets? Oh! But maybe there's some family photos that are precious to you. Maybe there's some family heirlooms that are precious to you. Maybe there's some animals that are precious to you. Do you think that could have been the case with Jacob? There were things that meant something to them. It's difficult to leave it all behind, right? And go to a new place that you have, well, they know he knew his son, right? Sort of. He'd known him for 17 years. And now it's been, 20 plus years since he's seen him. His brothers had been deceived by Joseph. So there could be some reservation, but God took away any reservation that Jacob might have had. But Jacob already had all this stuff with him. It's pretty cruel, right, to leave animals behind in a famine. So it makes sense to bring them along too. But one thing we notice We've seen it before with Jacob. We've seen it with Joseph. But in these times of transition, these times of major life events, there is a communion with God. There is an interaction with God. Can anybody see any present-day applications of that? I hope, right? Do we have decisions that we make on a daily basis? Our days are filled with little decisions, right? Every day. We may not make a big life-changing decision every day of our lives, but we make decisions every day. What decisions are important for us to consider God's will? Just the big ones? Certainly the big ones, right? But even the smallest. In everything we do, in every decision we make, every choice we make, we need to consider God's will. That's what James said, right? Not this James. James said in James chapter 4, verse 13, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows to do the right thing and fails to do it, for him it is sin." We need to always consider the Lord's will. In every plan, in every decision that we make, we need to make sure that it's God's will for us. And so, in every case, it's good for us to ask for God's help. It's good to ask for God's special blessing upon us. And certainly that is the case when we enter into a new phase of our life. Maybe it's new marriage. Maybe it's a new child, even if it is your sixth. There's always value in going to God and asking for His blessings on your life in those situations. And so why worry? Why worry about going to Egypt? What would be a reason for Jacob to worry about it? He had assurance from his son, his favorite son, that things were going to do right. And wasn't it the wisest thing to do? There's no food where you are, and there's plenty of food in Egypt. So why not just step out and go?
Well, God's last words on the subject were, "Don't go to Egypt."
Okay. That's right. That's what Jacob's father had heard, right? When there was trouble and Isaac was looking to run away and get refuge and shelter from that trouble, he was going to Egypt, and God said, "Do not go to Egypt."
And you imagine that might have gotten passed down.
Sure, sure. And you get the impression God said to Isaac, "Don't go to Egypt," because God wasn't ready to go to Egypt. But now God's there. We know God's there in Egypt, because how many times have we seen the Lord was with Joseph? And where's Joseph? He's in Egypt. And so when God comes to Jacob and says, "Go to Egypt, I will make you into a great nation. I will go down with you to Egypt." What sort of assurances do you think that would give someone like Jacob? It ought to, right? It ought to. Now, I was talking to Daniel before class, and I said, you know, how great would it be if as a church or even as an individual, but let's think about it as a church. If God would just speak out and say, Boulevard, Boulevard, do this, not that. That'd make things easy, wouldn't it? We say it would make things easy, but we'd still have to operate on faith that God would keep His promise. Now, we have no reason to doubt God, but we do, right? We do doubt God. We don't want to admit that, I'm sure. I don't want to admit that. But there are things that come up in life, and I'll go to God in prayer, and I say, God, help me with this. I'm ready to accept Your will. But I think sometimes in the back of my mind is, as long as it's the same as mine. Right? You ever had that sort of feeling? You're ready to give it to God, but you don't want to really let go all the way, because we need control. We feel like we need control. But God has told, He told Joseph, well, He told Abraham first, He told Isaac, He's told Jacob before, He's told Joseph since, and now He's telling Jacob again, I'm in control, not you. I've got this. I'm going with you. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to bless you in this land. Jacob believed it. Can we believe it? We need to believe it. We ought to believe it. But it's interesting as we read this and we hear Jacob, Jacob, coming from God. We've heard that before in the book of Genesis, right? We've heard Abraham, Abraham. We've heard, or in 1 Samuel, at the call of Samuel, what does God do? Samuel, Samuel. We think about Martha, right? You got Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, and Martha, she's busy doing everything, and she's so mad at her sister. We've been there, right? Not the only children in here, but everybody else has been there. And what does Jesus say? Martha, Martha. We think about Saul on the road to Damascus, and this great light shines. And what does he hear? Saul, Saul. What does that do? Do you think that's attention grabbing? Maybe it's the equivalent today of what sometimes people think about when a mother calls out the first and middle name of their child. It's an attention grabber. I'm talking to you. You listen to me. But it's also a form of encouragement when we see it coming from God. It's a reminder to us that God knows our names, that God cares about us, that God, He's concerned about our personal needs, the things that are going on in our lives. And that ought to be some encouragement to us. God here is reminding Jacob, I'm not just the God of Canaan. I'm the God of everywhere. Wherever my people are, there I am. That's where God is, wherever His people are. I mean, we're thankful, right, that God is not just the God of Canaan. Because guess where we're not? We're not in Canaan. But God would go with Jacob to be with him, to bless him, just like He had been with Joseph. With him and blessing him. And Jacob had nothing to fear. When had God ever broken a promise to Jacob? He'd never broken a promise to Jacob. He's never broken a promise. And so you think about if you're Jacob, if you're Jacob and you're hearing this promise from God, and you recognize God has never broken a promise that He's made to me, I can trust in this one. How many promises has God made to you that He's broken? He's never broken a promise to any one of us. And so when He tells us that He'll be with us, when He tells us that He'll bless us, when He tells us that He'll forgive us, Can we trust Him? Absolutely, we can trust Him. Why did God want Jacob's family to live in Egypt? He didn't before, right? He didn't want Isaac to go there. Why did He want Jacob's family in Egypt? Now, Egypt didn't turn into Israel, did it? Egypt didn't turn into the nation of Israel. Okay? They witnessed the growth. The Egyptians witnessed the growth of the Israelite people. Jacob's descendants would be multiplied right there. And that was the promise from the beginning, right? Or from the beginning of Abraham, that God would make a great nation out of this people.
Well, and ultimately, God wanted them in Egypt so that the Egyptians would enslave them, and then they would need to be delivered out of there, and they would leave Egypt relying completely on God. Egypt was the superpower at the time. It was the one power in the area. And so when Isaac was wanting to go to Egypt, he was wanting deliverance from Egypt. He was wanting help. And God said, no, you're not going to get your help from Egypt. And so now they go to Egypt, but again, it's not to get help from Egypt. Egypt is going to wind up pushing them out when God is done multiplying them where they are.
Okay. So you've got, when they get to Egypt, now they're under the protection of Pharaoh. They're being blessed, presumably, by Pharaoh, right? He said, I'll provide for you what you need. I'll protect you. He gives them the best of the land. But then, 400 or so years later, they start to feel this oppression by the Egyptians. And there's a reason for it. Those seeds are planted right here as they're getting the best of the land, as they're being provided for. And then later on, we may not get there today, we probably won't get there today, but later on, the Egyptians wind up selling themselves as slaves so they can have enough to eat. But here you've got the Israelites just growing and growing and growing and growing and being blessed and being prosperous and things, good things happening to them. They're outsiders. They were. They make it official, becoming resident aliens here in a little while. See, I'm really trying to stay short of these names for Scott.
And to multiply. And then later on, of course, they had to get out. But at the beginning, it was like God brought them there to help, because that was where they would multiply at. That was where they would do the, they would prosper the most.
It was an incubator.
It was an incubator. It was a greenhouse. It was a place that they could flourish and go and multiply.
When the Israelites got there, it was like basically Joseph looted Egypt. You know, he was in the position of authority, and he got all this stuff handed over to the Pharaoh. The Egyptians did. They sold themselves into slavery to Pharaoh. They got all the land. They got all the livestock. And that's in Joseph's hand. He's wielding that on behalf of Pharaoh. And then later on, you know, centuries later, when the Israelites leave again, once again, what do? They wind up looting Egypt again. You know, they get all the gold and everything, and they leave with all of that. And so it's like a, I don't know, it really is like a flower pot where God planted them and said, well, here's all your nutrients. Your nutrients is Egypt. And they took what they were able to get and went.
So another assurance that God gives to Jacob is concerning his death. He says, you're going to die in Egypt. Joseph, though, his favorite son, would see to it that his death and his funeral and his all that went along with that would be honorable for Jacob. And that Jacob's body, it would go back to Canaan. It would wind up in the same cave as Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah and Leah. And so whatever all of this put together, certainly that was a lot to put on Jacob, right? He's an old man. He's been traveling for a week with 60-something other people, right? And he gets this laid on him. How long do you think Jacob had to think about this for himself? I mean, he had all the time he wanted, I guess. I mean he's old, and it sounds like from what we've read in the previous few chapters and what we'll see this chapter and the next, he's just waiting on the day to die, right? He thinks just any day, much like his father, Isaac, who talked about how he was about to die and he didn't die for another, 20-some years. But here you have Jacob, seemingly with plenty of time to make this decision, but I feel like it didn't take him long. What else could God have told him to convince him? All right, I'm going with you. I'll be there with you. I'll bless you. You'll see your son. You'll have an honorable death. Your son will close your eyes. Joseph's hand will close your eyes, meaning that he would be the one who would, basically closing the eyes of your deceased father in this time. That was done by the firstborn. Joseph wasn't the firstborn, technically. But then, if you want to get real technical, he was a firstborn. He was a firstborn between Jacob and Rachel. Reuben had lost his claim. Simeon and Levi had lost their claim. Judah had sort of carved out a place, and he gets a special blessing. We'll see that in a few chapters, and we certainly see it as we move into the New Testament, right? But I believe as soon as Jacob heard this, the next words we see in verse 5, then Jacob set out from Beersheba. He was ready to go. He was anxious to see his son. He may have had some concerns about how all this was going to play out, but he was anxious to see Joseph.
Well, and you gotta imagine he was anxious to see Joseph before, he made the altar and, visited with God. But to postpone that in order to have that conversation and seek God's will, it says something about his priorities. Because, I mean, here's the son he's thought was dead for so many years, and now he's alive, and more than that, he's saying, hey, come on and live with me. And, before he just runs right out and does that, he asks. And that's, I don't know if that's something that, me in that position, that I would have that kind of prioritization.
It's get there as fast as I can.
Right.
And God can catch up. I think that's the attitude that sometimes we might have. We carve out our way and just try to let God ride on our coattails. And that it doesn't work that way at all. But with these assurances, with these promises, Jacob leaves Canaan and he moves on in to Egypt. We'll pick up in verse 5. And Jacob set out from Beersheba, the sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives, and their and the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters. All his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Pharaoh said, "Don't bring your things." Chapter 45, verse 20. That all the wealth of Egypt was at their disposal. Pharaoh thought a lot of Joseph. Joseph, in Pharaoh's eyes, was the reason why Egypt was being blessed, why Egypt was the one being preserved, and Joseph was. Joseph wouldn't take credit for it. Joseph gave the credit to God, and that's where the credit was due. But God was with Joseph, and Pharaoh recognized that. And so Pharaoh was willing to support the family of Joseph because of what a blessing Joseph had been for the Egyptians and for Pharaoh in particular. I'm going to read these names because I think names in Scripture are important, right? If these names weren't important, they wouldn't be in here. And we'll see some names that we're going to recognize, that we would recognize later on in Scripture again. But we'll just get going. Now, these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt: Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. Oh, and by the way, if anybody wants to correct me, you can take over. Verse 10, the sons of Simeon: Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of the Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The sons of Judah: Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Remember that? Already read about and Onan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamel. The sons of Issachar: Tola, Puva, Yob, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun: Sered, Elon, and Jaleel. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. Together, his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad: Ziphion, Haggi, Shuni, Esbon, Eri, Erodi, Areli. The sons of Asher: Imnah, Ishva, Ishvi, Beriah, with Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah: Heber and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter. And these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife: Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, who Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. And the sons of Benjamin: Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. A son of Dan: Husham. The sons of Naphtali: Jaziel, Guni, Jezer, and Shillem. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons in the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. So, just an observation or two. Do you think some of these children were twins or triplets? I mean, you think about how we name our children, or how people name their twins around here, and you know, you've got Erodi and Areli. You've got Imnah, Ishva, Ishvi. It just, I don't know, maybe they're twins, triplets. Kathy. hub them. And so, you know, that's what crossed my mind first as I was reading these names is, you know, they're similar, or maybe they just ran out of names. That's a lot of names. And you think they could have used different letters on some of these.
To name your son Yo, it almost sounds like you're naming the kid, hey, you.
But what's interesting to note about the names listed, the descendants listed, with the exception of one, they are all male. Why is that? Because only men matter, right? Only men count. Gary, that's what Gary was thinking. That wasn't me. That's just how they kept records, right? Do we know if Jacob had more daughters than Dinah? We don't know. They're not listed here if he did. But what we know is the names that we have here, the people that are counted as going into Egypt, as Jacob's house, were 70. And that included Joseph, Joseph's Egyptian wife, and their two children. 66 made the trip, and 4 were already there. I think about the position that Joseph is in politically. He's like the second most powerful man in the world, right? But he still finds himself subject to his father. That's pretty interesting to me. And maybe we don't feel that way about our earthly father. But no matter how powerful we get in this life, we're always going to be subject to our heavenly father. And you know, Joseph recognized that. I believe that gave him the perspective he needed to have in the situation with the status that he had risen to. He knew that God was still in control and that he was in the position he was in because God wanted him in that position. And God could remove him from that position. But he counted himself, or he was counted as part of Jacob's household. This wasn't Jacob's house that they were moving to. This was Joseph's place. But Joseph still subject to his father, counted among that household. It's still Jacob's household. It's not Joseph's household. Remember, Reuben tried to overtake his father's position as the head of the house because, you know, Jacob was in pretty bad shape, mourning the loss of Joseph. And Reuben made his move on one of Jacob's wives, and that cost him dearly. So Joseph recognized that there was still order in the home. No matter what the world viewed, how the world viewed Joseph, there was still order in the house of Jacob, and Joseph was not at the top. Now, these descendants are multiplied. God multiplies these descendants. He provides for them. He protects them. He keeps them together. He kept them together in Canaan, and he's going to keep them together in Egypt. Now, they were a small number in Canaan when they made this trip to Egypt. Now, years later, when Israel leaves, they're not so small anymore. It's not 70 people sneaking out in the middle of the night. It's closer to 2 million people in 400 years from 70 to 2 million. I didn't do some big extrapolation to see how you get to that number, but that's a lot of children. That's a lot of having children. On a regular basis for a long time.
It's a lot of keeping your identity. It's a lot of, you know, saying that we're still this family and not bleeding off at the edges into Egypt and saying, well, yeah, but we're Egyptian now.
That's right. And that is likely, I think, that would be why God blessed them in Goshen while these Egyptians are selling themselves as slaves. They're not, the Egyptians aren't spreading out into the country, but they're even more so moving into the city. And while Goshen is being preserved and the Israelites are growing. That's right. Goshen was very fertile. Goshen was the perfect place. It would be the best place to go. If you were going to have your choice, you'd pick that. You wouldn't think it'd be Pharaoh's choice. But that shows, again, how much Pharaoh respected and appreciated Joseph, that he would provide this for his family. And you think all 70 of these people realized that God had this great plan for Jacob's household? It's possible. I don't know that it's likely, but it's possible. Do you think any of them maybe wished we could just stay at home? Do we really have to go? Can we just stay here? In Canaan, they were starving. Whether they believed this was some great plan of God or not, they knew they needed food if they were going to live. And so, again, that's God's providence, keeping this family on the same page and moving them to where he wanted them to be. Let's see. Let's read 28 through 30. We got 3 minutes or less. He had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. And Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck for a good while. Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." The goodness of God, keeping his promise, just like we knew he would, just like Jacob trusted he would, just like Joseph knew that he would. Jacob reconnects after a 22-year separation. Now, the Bible tells us here that Joseph falls on his neck and cries. The fifth time, I think, in this, from chapter 37 to here, that we see Joseph crying. Jacob has an interesting response. "Now let me die." That was enough for him. Just to know that his son was still alive. But that wasn't enough for God. Now, we'll see this more in the next chapter and on in through the end of Genesis. How many years did Jacob have with Joseph from his birth? 17 years. Then there's a 22-year absence. How many years from now until the date of Jacob's death? 17 years. Another interesting coincidence we find in the pages of Scripture. Next week, we'll pick up there in verse 28 of chapter 46, and we'll finish chapter 46, and we'll get into chapter 47. Thank you.